Tommy, what are your thoughts on Kulikov?
Well, it meets a need, and you guys talked about it in the last segment. We've watched William Lagesson at times paired up with Adam Larson. We've watched Caleb Jones get in and out of the lineup, and those guys are young guys still establishing themselves at the NHL level, and here's a guy that's been around for a while. Plays about 20 minutes a night. Obviously, his numbers aren't sexy or anything like that, but if you can all of a sudden create a shutdown D pairing, if you end up putting him with Adam Larson, and these are two veteran guys that can give you steady minutes and ease some of the burden off of Barry and Nurse when it comes to playing against other teams' top guys, I think, you know, it's serviceable. It meets a need. And you know, we're kind of anticipating that maybe a deal like this would happen. And I know Oilers Twitter is in a weird place right now, guys. I don't know how much you're logging on to Twitter to see what's going on, but the reactions about everything and anything in regard to this trade deadline day and the acquisition of Kulikov and all the other things that didn't happen is it's interesting and bizarre all at the same time, and I just don't know what to make of it right now. But the pickup is a serviceable defenseman, and they got what they were kind of saying they needed.
When you look at this move for Kulikov, did you believe it puts them in a higher level to compete with either the Jets or the mighty Maple Leafs? And if not, why bother making the move if you can maybe play some of your younger players?
Right. Strud's like, just looking at this, I think you can see it being as a more reliable, steady defenseman than taking the risk with the younger guys that are, you know, hot or cold or hit or miss at times. And so I think that consistency potentially comes with this acquisition. So I think that's why you make it. And then you factor in the depth on the blue line. And now all of a sudden, you know, it looks like Cuckoo's kind of ahead of schedule. So you have all these options. And if the Oilers do make a run in the postseason, because honestly, anything could happen in the playoffs. I know a ton of games against each team in the North Division is one thing, and it gives us a read and how the matchups will kind of look when you know, certain teams in the North finally play each other in the postseason. But it's not the be-all, end-all tell as to what's going to happen. I think, you know, teams are going to make adjustments for their opponents, and that could have huge ramifications if they play a different style against a certain team. And so, you know, that's the fun of the silly season in the postseason is anything can happen. And I think this North Division, even though the Leafs are having a great season and running away with the North a little bit, the Oilers and Jets are kind of there in that 2-3 hole, and then we watch Montreal following up in the fourth hole. I still think that it's going to be nuts in the first two rounds in the North Division, but you make the move because you bring in a guy that's been around for a while, and you think that he can give you a steady, decent, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a night and be reliable, and that's why you do it.
Now, my question for you is this. When you look at the Winnipeg Jets, the Leafs and the Oilers and the Habs, you know, can you see a reason why the Jets chose not to have a more significant defenseman added to their lineup? No disrespect to Ben, but was that a mistake for their ability to contend with some of these other, what we assume will be the other three playoff teams?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a miss, and I'm sure Sheveldayoff tried to go swinging for the fences too. And it's funny, I was talking to Hernan Salas a little bit earlier, and I'm like, I think, you know, we get excited about the anticipation of trade deadline day, and this one wasn't particularly great, but there's some interesting moves that were made. But it almost, Strutty, feels like most of these GMs were working with a hand tied behind their back, and that's the constraints of the flat cap and the uncertainty of what's going to happen after the season's over and all of that in regard to where they're going to be with rosters and their money and all that. So it's interesting. So when you look at the Jets, they get Jordy Benn. I look at that and go, oh, I mean, I'd probably want Kulikov over Jordy Benn. But Winnipeg has a great forward unit. They have an excellent goaltender, Vezina winning goalie. And then the defense kind of is the one point that people point to and go, geez, you know, that defense, it's not particularly great. However, it surprises some people sometimes. I think it's respectable, but yeah, it doesn't put them over the top, and that's probably something that whoever plays them in the postseason is going to focus in on, is try to get to the second and third pairings and capitalize that way.
Tom Cazzola joins us on Sports Center TSN 1260. Tommy, what did you make of the Masters on the weekend? Hideki Matsuyama, the first ever Japanese player to win on tour. And man, you could see his celebration. I think like inside he was bursting, but outside he was just trying to be as stoic as possible. You could see it, you know, had the blinkers going yeah. a little bit, as he should be. You know, it's a pretty big moment for that country.
It is. It is. And what was it, like 5 or 6 a.m. when he finally putted in for the win? Really cool. Great to see. It's golf's an international game. I love it. There's some drama in the last couple of rounds. Zalatoris, oh, my goodness. I kind of was rooting for him. I love the Happy Gilmore angle.
Oh.
I think that's so funny. And then the fact that he was tweeting with Adam Sandler back and forth was amazing. But yeah, we saw some of the putting and the approaches and all that, balls in the water. It was good. There was some intrigue around the Masters, like there always is. So Matsuyama, and he was consistent too, guys. Like it didn't really feel like anyone would really, really make that charge and take it away from him, because he was playing so steady. So an interesting and fun weekend at the Masters on the course and off the course as well.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool moment, you know, to see that and the bow by his caddy at the end of it and all that. And
yeah.
But I find interesting. I don't think I like watching golf. I'm not really too emotionally involved in it, but I don't think I appreciated the impact that, you know, Hideki winning the Masters is going to have on golf in that area. Like they talked about, he said it. He hopes that it drives a lot of people to want to play the game. And I think we forget at times the international value of that whole thing.
True. I talk to some people yep. who have been in Japan. Mm-hmm. They say the problem is it is so expensive for golf.
Yeah, probably.
Right. It's
yeah.
extremely expensive because they just don't have the space for golf
yeah.
courses all over.
Fair
so
point.
So it's great that you want more people to play it, but it's like anything. If it's not cost effective, it's hard to get more people to play.
Yeah. And just speaking of Asia, like South Koreans, especially in the LPGA, are just knocking it out of the park. That they have a great golf program going. So if that, you know, puts golf in a more prominent spotlight in Asia, outstanding. It's such a fun sport, but I like it with a few wobbly pops throughout the round while I walk the course, but that's just me, boys.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, and it was amazing to see some of the guys like Koepka plus 21, you know, and some of these guys that mm-hmm. just exploded, and how hard, you know, it seemed like it was. And it's really, you know, the tradition like no other. I know they call that, but you know, it really is a unique tournament, and feels, even when you're watching at home, it feels quite intimate. I really feel like I'm almost like right on the edge of the course. Do you feel that way every time when you're watching it?
Yeah, golf is, especially with the broadcasts, 8K now, 4K TVs, all these camera angles, what they can do with it. It is, and the shot tracking too is really neat. Yeah. I mean, you can go, that's one of the sports where you can go, you're right there with the player basically. And I know a lot of sports you can't really get that close. Basketball to a certain extent. I know they have that new, or they tried it in the bubble. Was that along the rail, the camera that brings you up close. I like that. But in golf, you're right there. My first ever gig in broadcasting, guys, I was still at Nate in broadcast school. And I volunteered to work for Sportsnet doing the LPGA event here in 07. And I almost got hit by Michelle Wee's errant tee shot. I was standing outside a bunker on 15 at the Mayfair. And all I did, I was an audio person. And I had the huge boom mic. And I would have to go within like 5 to 6 feet of the player when they were swinging to get that nice cutting sound from the club and it striking the ball. And Michelle Wee almost smoked me with her errant tee shot. She great shot out of the bunker. And then the other thing, too, was I couldn't believe how close I was told to get. So there, we had our production meeting prior to the round starting, and they're like, all right, just get right behind them. I'm like, what? Pardon me? And it's a sport where you literally, as a viewer, can be taken in, right there with the players. And that to me is so cool. And I like how they're developing and expanding the looks and the technologies and all of that. It is really, really neat. And golf's a sport you can go all in and geek out on, and they don't hold anybody back. You're not restricted to boundaries like a hockey rink or a football field or anything like that. You're there. You're right there. It's cool.
Well, you can't get on the green, so you are restricted a little bit.
Right. Well, yeah, but
can't get on the fairway. But you're right. You get pretty close. You can get pretty close for sure. Tom Gazzola joins us at Sports Hitter, TSN 1260. Tommy, I want to ask you quickly. So the Boston Bruins out of Taylor Hall. And Curtis Lazar. The Islanders added Palmerian's Ajak. The Washington Capitals went out and added Anthony Mantha, but gave up Verona, right? And, and two picks. And then the Penguins got Jeff Carter. Who do you like most now in the East?
Okay. Hey, the Hall, good pickup for Boston. Curtis Lazar, good to see his career continue on. I know he's been up and down the last little while, but I really like the Islanders, guys. I think they're the ones that kind of get slept on by most people. People let them roll under the radar, and we forget. Like, collectively, I think I'm guilty of it too. They went to the conference final last year, and obviously the Cup champs handled them, but I like the Islanders, you guys. I really do, and I like the pickup, Zajac and Palmieri. Maybe that's the little boost that they need, a couple of veteran guys that can contribute, obviously, more so on the offensive side for Palmieri. I'll, in a sneaky good way, I'll say New York Islanders.
Yeah, you know what? I think the Islanders are going to be so hard to play against. And if they get a lead in a game, they're going to just strangle it. Like, they're going to be tough. They're going to be really tough. I like that group. And they did their work earlier. I thought they might try to add a little more flash somewhere, but, you know, obviously there weren't that many. You know, who's the best scorer out there? You know, I guess Taylor Hall, but I guess at this point we're kind of unsure. Maybe Hoffman, but maybe, you know, he's not the most respected defensive player in the league, and that's what Islanders like. But I'm telling you, I do not want to play the Islanders. They are going to be so hard to play against, frustratingly. They're going to choke. They're just going to choke teams out. Get a goal, choke them out. It's going to be tough hockey.
Boys, that price that Washington paid too for Mantha, boy, oh boy. That's a lot. Good job by Steve Yzerman. And Verana's had better seasons than Anthony Mantha ever has had.
Yeah, well, I think...
you're right in points, right? You look at their goals. But also, you do have to look at who Mantha played with compared to who Verana played with.
Fair point.
Right. So, but it does seem like a lot, but Mantha's 6'5", and it feels like they felt like, hey, a big guy, skill, but it's a lot. It's a lot to add the first and the second. Good on Detroit, right? I think Washington, that trade, do they get that much in the offseason? Probably not, but I think they get it this close because Washington feels like they now get Mantha for four playoffs instead of three.
There's some big bodies on that Caps team now all of a sudden. That's scary, and they're going for it again, boys. They really are. Should be interesting. Everybody's getting ready for the arms race, and bring it on. Can't wait.
Tommy, have a great one, buddy. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.